Welcome to Inside the Mortgage Mind, a Zenix podcast where you'll hear stories from professionals throughout the industry, from new LOs to CEOs, about their journey to achieving success. We hope these stories inspire and energize you to take your business to the next level.
My name is Michael Norton, and I was the CEO and founder of Tremazing. I started a couple of other companies. I'm now the executive vice president here at Zenix. Our company, Tremazing, was acquired by Zenix back in the over the summer here. Over my 30-plus years, dating myself here, Michael, 30-plus years in business, I've always been a student of the game. And it's one of the reasons Michael and I got together many, many years ago, and we've been running in parallel paths around personal and professional development. But when I think of guys like Zig Ziglar, Tommy Hopkins, Dennis Waitley for sure, Stephen Covey, Brian Tracy, all the greats, you know, of the past, Jim Rohn, you know, when you think about their body of work and just being able to take what they taught me and then go through my career and build it into my businesses, build it into my organizations, into my selling teams, and then share it anywhere I've done a keynote or a presentation. And I know Michael, you know, Michael Altshuler, who's with us today, a good friend of mine. And we've run in different parallel paths over the years, and he is a recognized motivational speaker, author, expert. He's currently the senior vice president of sales for a private jet aviation company called Jets.com. If you fly privately, you're going to want to probably check those guys out. But Michael is totally revamping that team. And here's one thing I'll say, Michael, before I let you maybe say a couple words about yourself, is that this topic today, how to be successful in selling, what it really takes, is based on the book, an ebook that I wrote called The Ifications of Selling. And when I wrote this book, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a second, one of the interesting things was that I called people and said, hey, I called the Ziglar, Dennis Waitley, Tom Hopkins, and other folks. I said, hey, I need a couple of endorsements. Would you guys mind endorsing this for me? And I called Michael and I told him what it was about. And I said, would you read this book and endorse it? And he says, you have to be kidding me. The Ifications of Selling? I'm like, yeah, The Ifications of Selling. You know what that means? He goes, of course I know what it means. Not only do I know what it means, but I own the website salesifications.com. So he was already, again, running in another parallel path without us even talking to each other about how do we make salespeople better? How do we accelerate success for businesses and salespeople? How do we increase revenue, improve margins, reduce turnover, all of those great things? So, Michael, you want to share a few thoughts about yourself?
Yeah. First of all, thank you, Michael, and thank you all for joining us today. It's a real pleasure and it's a privilege. I mean, anytime I get to be in a room with so many people in sales, I just get super pumped up and charged up because Michael and I really are our greatest, besides getting paid for what we do, really the greatest pay is knowing that we made a difference in someone's life, that we helped improve their life, accelerate their success in any way. I mean, that's what's in my heart. You know, I've been blessed with a company in New Jersey. I was in the copier business, sold my company to a multi-billion dollar company. But really my greatest pleasure has always been touching lives, making an impact in people's lives. And I'm just grateful to have that opportunity to do that today. And like Michael, I've been a student of the game. I've been a student of the game for countless years, more than 30, Michael. So wanted to make you feel young here. So ultimately, at the end of the day, Zig Ziglar was my mentor, Tony Robbins, in later years, who his mentor was Jim Rohn. So ultimately, at the end of the day, we're all here to grow, to learn, to get better, to evolve and transform.
That's right. So again, put a new set of ears on. If you've heard some of this stuff before, maybe you're going to hear it newly for the first time or see it differently. What do you think, Michael? Let's jump in.
Yeah, let's do it, baby.
Let's do it, man. So, you know, what Ifications of Selling isn't, is not just another selling process. I've been studying sales processes. I've studied just about every sales methodology and process that is available on the market today. I'm a voracious reader, and I've seen everything from, you know, your two or three or four step process all the way through your 14, 15 step process and everything in between. And we know they all start with something on the front end, you know, whether how we're going to initiate the sale and prospect and fill our funnel to qualifying, disqualifying, presenting, proposing, overcoming objections, closing, and following up. But if we netted them down to these four, there are so many great companies out there who already have these sales processes. Here at Zenix, we have a sales process that we teach the mortgage industry. But there's so many other companies who touch on this. So what the Ifications of Selling is meant to do is sit in between each one of these areas to find its way in there. And what are the stories that salespeople tell? What do we think about as we're getting ready for our sales day? What do we think about between calls? What is some of the mindset, the activity or effort and the skills that we work on in between just that linear selling process? Because again, there's so many out there. I will tell you that as we jump into this, the one area that I will touch on, because it is an ification, is qualification. Michael and I are going to talk about qualification because arguably it's the most important part of the selling process. So, Michael, the first ification, and people ask me, why did we start with amplification? So amplification to me, as I thought about all the different ifications that we wrote about, was that, and I had a few that were going to be the front runner, Michael, but when I thought about the one I wanted to start with, it was amplification. Here's a couple reasons that I thought about. And before I share this, if you're listening, if you're watching right now, and you've got a pad of paper in front of you, you've got a sheet of paper, if you've got someplace or even electronic notes, I just want you to write down this one sentence, talent without effort breeds mediocrity. Talent without effort breeds mediocrity. And we're going to talk about that. So amplification, you know, J. Douglas Edwards was the first one to say it, but this next statement was made popular by Tom Hopkins, Michael. And I don't know if you remember this one, but he said, sales is either the easiest work, lowing paying profession, or the hardest working, highest paying profession, right? The easiest work, low pay, or the highest paying, hardest working, highest paying profession. And the choice is up to us. So when we think about amplifying everything that we do in Sandler, you know, the Sandler training system, they built their whole process around their success triangle, behavior, attitude, and technique. And they will tell you that it's not one leg of the stool isn't more important, or one side of the triangle isn't more important than the other. They're all equally as important. And it's equally as important to amplify our attitude, our behavior, and technique. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, I'm a big behavior guy. You know, I've been working with salespeople for over 30 years, and I've always questioned and been challenged by, you know, what makes the top, you know, Pareto's 80-20 rule, what makes the top 20% perform at that level when everyone is exposed to the same exact training? So whether it's Sandler, or whether it's Miller-Hyman or whatever it is, consultative selling, if you have, and let's say you even go one step further, the top 20%, middle 60%, and bottom 20%. If you right now you're listening to this, where do you reside? You ever wonder why do the top 20% reside up there? What do they do differently? How do they think differently? How do they act differently? Attitude, behavior, skills. And what I've learned over the years and what I focused on was more the behavior side of things, that people need to change what they're doing and what they're thinking in order to learn their skills, in order to make more calls. So what does it take to have that mindset, the self-talk, the habits, rituals, and routines? What does it take to get those amplified so we can amplify the results and learn more skills and make more sales?
Yeah, that's awesome. So one of the sales stories that came from my recent history when I was inspired to write this book came from a technology company. And I know we're here talking with a lot of folks in the mortgage industry and the banking industry, but this is an actual technology company. And we had a chance to work with them and evaluate what was going on in their sales organization and look for ways to make improvements within the organization. And we really dug in and analyzed data. We interviewed all of their salespeople. And there was one thing that jumped out, Michael. So two people were onboarded at the exact same time. Right. They had been there. They were about a year and three quarters in. They were almost to the end of their second year. And the woman's name was Joanna. And the gentleman's name was Darren. The rest of the class that they came through were no longer with the company, so it was just the two of them left. They went through the exact same training. They use the exact same technology. They're selling to the exact same solutions and services. Yet Joanna, in November, was already 130% of her quota. Darren was only 80% of his quota. And as we dug in and we talked about day in the life and their obstacles and their opportunities, we talked to the senior management, and we said, you know, I'm just seeing this, you know, two different people manage the same way. What do you think the biggest difference is? You and I, and this came from a few different managers. Yes. And they said, well, one word when I think about Joanna, amplification. She amplifies every single thing. Every day she comes ready to play. She is in the game every day. Darren, unfortunately, we feel like he's become a little complacent. He's in his comfort zone. And that came out time and time again. And that's not the first company we heard it from, but this particular technology company, they made this front and center for us.
Mike, I got to touch on that real quick. You know, if you're comfortable right now, stop being comfortable. Comfort is the killer of success. Let me restate that. Comfort is the killer of success, personally and professionally. You have to be comfortable being uncomfortable and uncomfortable being comfortable. All the great ones, those that are most successful, push themselves beyond their comfort zone into the discomfort zone, and that's where they operate. It's stress plus rest equals growth. When you work out, you push your muscles beyond their limits to get stronger. You need to do so with yourself every day. In fact, Mike, you and I talked about this weeks ago, that if we improve just 1% every single day, we'll be 37 times better at the end of the year. So just incremental small improvements, as they say, inch by inch, anything's a cinch, yard by yard, anything's hard. Let's grow a little bit every day, but let's have that growth mindset, get out of the comfort zone and start growing, being a little uncomfortable in that process. And you'll reap the rewards.
Yeah. I mean, we did talk about this, Michael, as you and I talk all the time about performance.
Yes.
And folks, we're staying a little extra time on amplification because we think it's so important. But think about this, to what Michael just said. At 211 degrees, water boils. At 212 degrees, it turns to steam. And with steam, you can power an engine. 1 degree difference. That's all Michael was just talking about. 1 degree every day to make a difference, to amplify what we're doing. So Michael, check this out. Just yesterday alone, and I couldn't share this with you because I just was reading it even until last night when I was checking my different blogs and things that I read. It was talking about this, the great resignation, all of these people leaving. And one of the first stats I wanted to share with people, that when we talk with organizations, we go in and do our consulting and we determine, why are people leaving? And people right now we know are leaving in droves. People are poaching people from different companies. People are looking for top talent. So we have to have the strategies in place to make sure that we're communicating, collaborating, building a culture that not only attracts people, but gets them to want to stay. There was 4 different articles alone. I'm sure there was even many more, but I read 4 articles yesterday. And as I was reading the reasons for people being exited by their company, as they're trying to fill it with new talent, they were talking about complacency. Again, we are living in a complacent generation where people are okay at 50 or 60% of their quota, right? And I don't know if this is going to shock you, Michael, but the studies say that 34 to 55%, most organizations are experiencing 34 to 55% turnover. And now with this great resignation, we're seeing even higher numbers of people leaving. They're filling out their employee surveys or their employee satisfaction, employee engagement surveys. They're voting with their feet. They're leaving, right? And is that because they became complacent and weren't achieving success? Or, you know, was the company complacent and not doing what they needed to keep them? What are your thoughts on turnover and complacency, Michael?
Yeah, it's a great question. They did other surveys that, you know, the majority of workers are dissatisfied with their current job. So, from everything I've studied and read about this, Michael, it's either they haven't pursued their passion, they're in the wrong place, the wrong job. And, after a while that wears on you, I want to pursue my dream. And they go for, they go for it. Or their manager, their direct report is terrible, doesn't help them grow, isn't a leader, and as a result, they leave for that reason. And sometimes it's finger pointing. Remember, when you point the finger, you have 3 pointing back at you. You know, we always have to look and be responsible for, is it what I'm doing or not doing that is the reason for me not being successful in my current career?
And we talk about success, it's about people attaining quota. In Harvard Business Review, they reported only 60% of people across organizations, on average, 60%, and sometimes less, of people in a sales organization are achieving their quota. So, you think about And we all know, even in the mortgage industry, we all have a quota. We all have numbers that we're supposed to bring in every single month and then at the end of every single year. And when we talk to them about, well, why aren't people achieving their quota? You're giving them the incredible technology, all these sales enablement tools. They have their list. They've been prospecting like crazy. And they're like, no, well, wait right there. That's what they're not doing, right? They've become complacent. They think the leads are just going to come into them. The number one reason we're seeing people only hit 60% of their quota is because they're complacent. So twice that word showed up in turnover and the achievement of quota, this comfort zone complacency.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, Michael, you know, the road to success is all uphill. You have to pay the price to enjoy the price. And if it was easy, everyone would be doing it. My dad brought me up with two things that resonated with me my whole life. He said, the successful person will do what the unsuccessful person won't do. And if you don't feel like doing it, chances are it's the right thing to do. So anytime, you know, you have that self-talk going on in your head, I don't feel like doing this, you could go to Mel Robbins' book, The 5 Second Rule, count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and go and just do it. Your gut will tell you the right thing to do that you know you should be doing to get the result you want, and just go and do it. And Nike kind of coined that phrase, but it's that important.
Hey, Troy, looks like we have a question maybe.
Troy, you're on mute.
Thank you. So stress plus what equals results was the question that just wanted to be reiterated there that was out there.
Okay, great question. I just read a book called Peak Performance, and I always thought push, like stress, like pushing, go beyond your comfort zone, but it's actually stress plus rest. The recuperation is as important as the stress part. You must have proper rest, and here's a ratio that is scientific and psychological. So this is the ratio. It's 50 to 90 minutes of total focused energy on one thing. It could be spiritual, could be physical, could be mental, whatever it is, 50 to 90 minutes total focus, and then 7 to 21 minutes rest, depending on what it is you're working on, your DNA makeup. So it's 50 to 90 minutes on, full focused, and 7 to 21 minutes off. And that will give you optimum performance. All we care about is operating at this peak level of performance, raising the bar, and continuing to stay there consistently. That's what this is all about.
Thank you very much, Michael.
My pleasure.
Hey, so lastly, to that point, and we'll move on because we spend even more time here, Michael, than we thought we would on amplification. And you inspired a whole bunch of other thoughts that I'll talk to you about for the next time we do this. But so we talked about turnover and complacency, and we talked about the impact on the quota attainment. But here was something when we said, all right, let's look at your top performers. Let's look at the far end of the bell curve. Why are these people successful? And 75% of respondents said it's because they amplified. This was their word. They amplified sales behaviors. They knew how many calls they had to make, how many follow-up emails they had to send, how many LinkedIn connections, how many, all the different sales activity they needed to do. They amplified that. 75% of the responding companies said that was the key to their sales success. So we know that, you know, we're here to talk about will and skill, an amplification of will and skill. And we're going to talk a little bit about will and skill in a second. But you think about synergy, you know, what the synergy is, the sum of the parts. It has to be greater than the sum of the parts. So 1 and 1 just can't equal 2. Will and skill, when we put them together, should be equaling 3. But now get this, when we amplify will and skill, then we're talking about 1 and 1 equals 5. We amplify our will, we amplify our skill. Right, we connect our heart and our head. The distance between our heart and our head is the same for everybody. It's 18 inches. Will and skill, all we have to do is connect those dots. So how do we do that? And we'll talk about this at another time as you continue to come through the Zenix, some of the Zenix programs, but healthy self-image, believing in yourself, knowing what, Michael, what you just said was key. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, just go do it. Knowing what to do and just doing it, executing on that. And doing more of the right things. When was the last time, you know, we've all heard this exercise where you say, make a list, what I need to start doing, stop doing, do more of, do less of, right? We know we should do that. When was the last time any of us did that assessment? I recommend doing that like once a week, once every 2 weeks. What am I doing that I shouldn't be doing? What should I be doing differently? What should I be doing more of, the right things? And then amplifying all of that. So let's get into the next amplification, Michael, because we hit that one pretty hard.
Sure.
Simplification. So this is fun only because, again, as I talked to Michael, I sent him the book and he read it and he says, I cannot believe you have simplification as number 2.
Yeah, Michael, let me give you a great quote. Go ahead, Michael.
So he says, He goes, I have a quote for you. I said, read the next page. So we both picked the same quote. Make everything as simple as possible, but not simply. Yep. And as I've been around, you know, working with the Zig Ziglar organization, as the business partner of Zig's, vice president of sales, president of the company, business partner, and been with Sandler. I ran the Sandler Global corporate training team for 10 years. So I've been around this. I've been a student of the game forever. And people would say, what's one of the common mistakes that you see sales organizations make, or sales leaders, or even salespeople? What's one of the mistakes that they make? And I say, you know what they do? They complicate the uncomplicated. They really go out of their way to over-architect, over-engineer, do something that's makes it so hard. They become the sales prevention department instead of the sales enablement department, right? So we need to learn to simplify, right, Michael?
Yeah, you know what? I want to give just, this is a great takeaway. I would write this down. Anytime you're writing an email, a text message, these are things you can apply as soon as you hang up from this webinar. You send an email, you're ready to make a phone call, a text message. The first thing you should do is start with the end in mind. What is the objective that you want from this call, this email, this text? The second are the three C's. This is the acid test for what you just wrote in an email or a text message. Is it clear? Is it concise? So clear and concise and compelling. Those three C's, clear, concise, compelling. If it passes that test and it hits your objective, remember, less is more, simple is better, and fast is essential. We're in a fast-paced world. Keep everything short, tight, and concise.
That's exactly right, Michael. I mean, I when I hear the three C's, I also revert back to something else that, you know, even goes to the amplification of a healthy self-image. As I said, one of the mistakes people make are overcomplicating the uncomplicated. They don't keep it simple.
Exactly.
But you say, so what do you think is the best trait that you can give somebody? And I thought that's where you're going with the three C's. But when I say the number one sales trait that any salesperson could have and any manager could instill in their salespeople are the three C's: confidence, confidence, and confidence. Confidence in yourself, confidence in yourself, confidence in your products and services and solutions you're selling, and confidence in your company that they'll stand behind those products, services, and solutions, and you. If you have those three C's, you can go toe-to-toe with anybody, toe-to-toe with any buyer, toe-to-toe with any competitor. So, but let's keep it tight. So simplification. That means when we're meeting with people, keep that agenda tight. Keep the communications tight. When we're asking good questions, don't be all over the map going down rabbit holes. Keep our questions relevant. Stay on task and on focus. Speak to the value that we deliver. Again, not things that you think are important, but when we ask good questions, we'll find out what's important to our prospects, and then keep our solutions centered on that value. And then one of the things that I see people, salespeople miss all the time is, they talk about, well, maybe I'll follow up with you in a week or 2 weeks, or, you know, send me an email. When you can get really simple and say, no, can we just put it on the calendar right now? What is that immediate next step? And here's where keeping it simple pays off. Here we are in football season, Michael. It's, you know, the 2021 season. And so I went back and I did some research on last season. When you think about simplification here, if you're familiar with the NFL or familiar with, you know, high school, any level of football, there's a delay of game penalty. The delay of game penalty, if they went over the time allotted for the game clock or the time, the play clock, they get assessed a 5-yard penalty. That 5-yard penalty can take them out of field goal range for a game winning shot or the end of the half, or it can take them away out of touchdown, you know, range or going for it. And when I looked at the data from last season, there were 123 delay of game penalties. 123 delay of game penalties. These are professionals playing at the highest level. Only five teams had one such penalty in the entire season. One such penalty. Two of those teams were in the Super Bowl last year, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Kansas City Chiefs. They both only had one delay of game penalty the entire season. What does that tell you? They had very clear plans. They knew what the audibles were. The players were ready to get on the field when they knew it was their turn to be on the field, right? Their coaches were communicating very clear. There was a well-thought-out game plan. These guys weren't winging it. They were there to win.
Yeah, I think I just want to touch on that. You know, arguably the greatest coach of the modern era in the NFL is Bill Belichick. Whether you like him or you don't like him, unimportant. The bottom line is he's had more wins as a coach in the NFL in the modern era. And how does he do that year in and year out? And, you know, of the tens of thousands of quotes that are out there in the world, there's one thing he believes in and is on the locker room, inside the locker room, that all the players subscribe to. That is their mantra. They live by this. And I think we would do well, everyone on this call would do well by living by this mantra, this quote. And it's from The Art of War from Sun Tzu. And it says, every battle is won before it's ever fought. It's about practice, drawing, rehearsing with the right blueprint. If you put that time and energy in to get better, to improve, and you have that plan in place, meaning you're mastering the game before you're even in the game, that will lead to consistent success at the highest level.
Yeah, and practice, drill, and rehearse. Tommy Hopkins, man. We'll thank him for that one. You and I were both students of his. Practice, drill, rehearse. Practice, drill, rehearse. And that goes for salespeople.
When you're sick of it, Mike, practice, drill, rehearse some more. Just look at all the pros. Why would someone go out and take 1,000 free throws when you look at Steph Curry and say, why are you doing this? You're the greatest in the NBA. He says, why do you think I'm the greatest in the NBA? Kobe Bryant was known for that. They're all known. All the top performers in the world, Michael Jackson, no one knows this, and Steve Jobs, or I'll use Steve Jobs. Do you know he practiced 1 hour? He was a great orator. He practiced 1 hour for every minute of his speech. That's what made him so great.
That's what makes it tight. So qualification, let's jump into qualification, because I said, you know, we weren't going to talk about the steps in a linear selling process except for qualification. And I have done this presentation. Michael, the graph you're seeing right here, whether I'm sitting next to somebody on an airplane, in pre-pandemic, I was flying every single week. I've been in front of companies and CEOs and senior sales leadership for decades. And I was just always curious. And I would write these four circles and I'd draw them out and I'd say, hey, do me a favor. You know, you run a sales organization, you have salespeople on your team. To you, what's the most important one, or what could your team get better at? And most of them would joke and say, all of it. We need help, and all of a sudden do that. I said, no, do me a favor, just for this conversation, if you had to pick one of these that made a difference, or let me ask you this way, if you look at your very top performers, what do they do in this that's different from everybody else? And every one of them will go back and say, qualify. They are really good at understanding money, authority, timing, right? Need. What really is driving the decision, and who makes the decision? They get really, really good at that. They don't spin cycles chasing people who are unqualified. And they also talk about the fact that their salespeople who are top performers understand that the customer is qualifying them at the same time to do business. So they have to establish trust. And the easiest way to establish trust is by spending a lot of time asking the right questions before you just start spouting off solutions.
Yeah, that's spot on. And again, that goes back to preparation. I was talking to one of the agents here today, one of the brokers, and I said, so if someone said this to you, what would your rebuttal be? And we all listen. Everyone on this call has had objections thrown at us. Have you practiced the best rebuttal to that objection? Did you practice drone rehearsals? Tom Hopkins would say exactly what to do in that selling situation. And have you gone to a top producer and say, what would they say? If you haven't done that, I encourage you to do that. That will it will amplify your game, and it will allow you to do better and get better results.
We're going to jump just through qualifying here. You know, a lot of people, when we're qualifying, there's some people say, well, I want to qualify hard because I want to move on to the people who can buy. Yeah, we want to get to the no. If it's going to be no, that's okay. We want to get to no faster, but we want to know we're qualifying for yes. Always remember that. We're qualifying because we want to understand what yes looks like so we can work with our prospects and customers. But if it's going to be no, it's no. But sometimes no is only no for now. And we just move it. No today doesn't mean no tomorrow. People make new decisions based on new information. Ramification. So here's the story I think about ramification, Michael. And I don't know if you've ever done this. I know you've seen pictures of the stuff I do. I love to make breakfast. Everybody knows I love to make breakfast. I love it. I have a house full of people and I love to make breakfast. And so I'm making eggs, I'm making pastries, I'm making fruit, cutting up fruit, I've got yogurt, I've got everything, the juice, the coffee, everything going. And I'm always making some kind of breakfast meat, if not two or three. I'm talking about a buffet style breakfast. And we all know how this goes. I've done it a million times, but I can't tell you the few times. Every once in a while, I let my head drift. I start paying attention to the pancakes, or, you know, I wanted to cut up this avocado too. And all of a sudden, It's not the smell of the burning bacon that gets me my attention. It's the smoke alarms in my house going off, the dog barking incessantly, everybody opening windows and doors and fanning up the smoke, right? The ramification of me taking my eye off the ball for just a couple of minutes, right? And so in sales, when we lose focus, the ramification of not paying attention, we're not going to have dogs barking or cats meowing and kids laughing and, you know, fire engines showing up, but we're going to have prospects laughing. We're going to have competition laughing. The ramification of not qualifying properly, not paying attention along the way, becomes really costly. And here's one example, and we're going to see it right now as we're bumping up against time. One of the ramifications that I've been seeing happening a lot in the virtual selling world more and more is that we lose track of time. We're not managing the sales clock, just like a game clock or a play clock in sports. We lose focus of the must-haves. We take our eye off the bacon. We start to focus on the nice-to-haves. And now we're having a conversation that's not talking about value. And we didn't leave any time for questions or what ifs. And so if our meeting started at the top of the hour, and we know we only have an hour with that prospect or that customer, we have to be very, very careful, because as we go along, if we're not, poor clock management will lead to, you know, there's not going to be clear steps. There's going to be confusion. We're going to be racing against the clock. So ramification, and when you go into the book and you read more about it, it's making sure that we're staying focused and on task, because our prospects and customers are trusting us to bring them the right solution and to guide this part of the conversation.
Yeah, it's great. And by the way, Michael and I, this is not our first time. It's probably our third time going through this deck. That even though we know this stuff and we've talked about it for years and years and hundreds of times, this is how you stay on time. Even when something comes up, the what ifs, you have audibles to speed up or slow down based on the circumstances and the situation you're in to get to the end game, which is the result you're trying to achieve.
See, and I'll share another story, and this is in the book. If you downloaded the ebook, and this is a story out of healthcare I wanted to share with the group. And to me, it's extremely important. We were working with a healthcare organization. I was working with a group of salespeople in the diagnostic imaging business, Michael. And they were selling mobile cardiovascular diagnostic imaging systems or services. So echocardiography, ultrasounds of the heart, right? They would go around. And this particular gentleman lived in a secondary city, so not a big metropolitan area. And part of his secondary city that he lived in, he also had a rural part of his community where he had small hospitals that he'd have to go see. And they would send a truck and a van out to do, you know, those types of tests maybe once a month or every 6 weeks because the population wasn't so big. And he went out there to visit the hospital and the doctor, and the doctor pulled him inside and said, "Hey, listen, I really need a favor. I really need a favor from you. I have a farmer out here. He's very stubborn. He's in his early 40s. I know he's got pathology. I know he's sick. He's just not taking it from me, saying, I know I'm trying to send him into the city to go get some testing and get worked up. And he wants to wait until you come out here next month. I want him to have the test today if possible." So the sales rep, you know, he was already 2.5 hours away from his house. He made some phone calls, found a piece of equipment back in the city. He drove back and got that, found a technician who was willing to drive out there. They go out there, they do one test on one patient. It only took 20 minutes. So it took him, you know, now he's on 7.5 hours of driving time between driving out, driving back, driving out, another 10 hours altogether by the time he drove home to do a 20-minute test. As he was driving back from the rural area, he drove through an area where he lost cell phone coverage. When he got back into cell phone coverage, there was a voicemail from the doctor saying, "Hey, I just wanted to thank you because the patient is on his way into the city. I was able to show him on the test how bad his heart really was. And now he saw it. You saved this man's life. And I just want you to know how grateful I am, how grateful his family is." This guy said he broke down. He was telling me the story. I was tearing up. I mean, he said it changed the way that he goes about selling and servicing every one of his accounts. We're not all in the life-saving business. We're not all in the healthcare business. But even in the business that most of you on this call are in, and that's in the mortgage business and the banking business, you're making dreams come true. You're taking people and putting them in their starter home, their very first home. And I don't know if you ever remember what it felt like to have your first home. It's amazing. Or upgrading to a home where you can start having family or going to that retirement home. We're making dreams come true in this. So to live with this attitude of gratitude and servant salesmanship and leaving with a servant's heart and an abundance mentality changes everything. Michael, I know you've got thoughts on it.
Yeah, I want to say, first of all, I so subscribe to this. And I want everyone to nix this word from the vocabulary, that you never want to say you have a customer or a client. Because to get a customer or client means you're just reaching expectations. I want you to reframe that. I want you to think moving forward from this webinar that you want zealots, ambassadors, and raving fans. You want to exceed their expectations to the point we've all gotten things. I had someone drop this off that I just hired. He dropped off a bottle of wine just earlier today. And he was just hired. He doesn't even work for me. That will forever make an imprint here, but more importantly here. So what does it take? And I'll just share this from our good friend, Tony Alessandra. We know the gold standard is treat others as they want to be, as treat others as you want to be treated. He wrote a book called The Platinum Rule, treat others as they want to be treated. That goes back to what Michael said about finding out what their needs are. What is their dream? What's their perfect home? And then help them reach that. But remember, no more customers or clients. Have them become a raving fan and exceed their expectations. Do more than is ever expected. And now you'll create that raving fan. And they'll tell a ton of other people and you'll get tons of referral business.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Zig, we have this quote here, gratitude is one of the healthiest of all human emotions. Zig also talked about, and you know, everybody knows me, huge Zig Ziglar fan. And I know there's tons of folks out there who are. But he would talk about the attitude of gratitude. Remember we talked about earlier in amplification, Michael, when we first started this, and we said amplifying, like Sandler says, attitude, behavior, and technique.
Yes.
How do we amplify attitude? How do we amplify the attitude of gratitude? And you're exactly right. People will say thank you, and it doesn't take all that much to say thank you. And I think this is a lost art. The handwritten thank you note or somebody dropping by with that bottle of wine. 2 weeks ago, I helped a young entrepreneur. He came to my house on a Saturday and he needed help with a business plan. So we spent the entire day. And then I happened to be home during the week. And he asked me, he said, I have some questions after the day we spent together. Can I come over and just run some thoughts by? And I said, sure. You know, after dinner, stop by. And he came by the house again. And then I come home the next day and there's a note in my box, my mailbox, a handwritten note from a young 25, 26 year old young man who's starting out in the business world. I hold on to those thank you cards. I hang on to those thank you notes. That goes into my book of gratitude, right?
Yeah, and again, if you deliver what's expected, it leaves people neutral. As if you know, they have the five love languages. If you're in a relationship, the five, what makes your partner, what makes the woman in your life, what makes her happy? Is it giving? Is it gifts? What makes her happy? So to know what makes them happy and go that extra mile, that thoughtful, kind, doesn't have to cost a lot of money. That thank you note, handwritten, not an email, not a text, but a handwritten note. And I'll share this one thing with you. I had someone send this to me. This is great. He is a leader of his health organization, and he was speaking to a woman and she wasn't feeling well. So he sent her a can of chicken noodle soup, Jewish penicillin. He sent that there. He mailed it to her, and she sent him back. She owned a mattress company. She sent him back a mattress, believe it or not. I told him he had a problem. He should be dealing with Ferrari customers that own Ferrari dealerships, not mattresses. But here's the thing. I went out and I bought 10 cans. Think about this, the impact this will make on someone. And I've sent them out and it blew people's minds. If someone is sick, get 10 cans of Campbell's soup. Go to Michael's and you can get the little cylindrical package that you just drop the can in. And I bought like the price tag thing with the string and I wrote, feel better soon. And I scotch taped that to the top so it's hanging down over the Campbell's soup. And I sent it out to some customers and friends that weren't feeling well. They will keep that on their credenza. And when people say, why do you have a chicken Campbell's soup on your credenza? They say, you won't believe what this person did for me. Besides, it felt great doing that, that he went out, he got the container, he got the soup, he put the note, the whole thing. It'll blow people's minds. Takes you a little bit of time, costs $12, but they'll never forget you.
That's amplification. That's what we're talking about, folks, right there. And so going back, if you didn't write it down the first time, when I said it when we first started, I said, write down this one sentence. Talent without effort breeds mediocrity. Anybody, everybody's going to do the bare minimum. You set yourself apart by amplifying that attitude of gratitude. 100%. So Michael, gamification. So our last ification for today, there's 15 ifications in the book. We're probably going to do another one of these webinars with maybe another five of the ifications we didn't touch on today, but we want to end on gamification. And gamification, you know, there's a lot of gamers out there. Some of you on this call might be gamers. You might have kids who are gamers. I know a couple of my kids are gamers. But there's also the game of life and the game of work. And whether we're talking about electronics games or we're talking about sports and board games and other things, it seems like one of the games, Michael, that people are playing these days is like we're racing. We're always against the clock. It's like we never have enough time to do what needs to get done. Salespeople will say, I have so much administrative work. I've got so many other things to do. I don't have really time to sell. We're trying to keep pace in a race with the rush and crush of life. And then we watch shows that everything is timed. You look at some of these cooking shows and they're great. I love them. But you have 40 minutes with a basket of ingredients you've never seen before, right? And they're turning out world-class dishes. Or you look at MasterChef and they've got 60 minutes and they're like five-star Michelin dishes when they finally get graded. But everything is on the clock. So as salespeople, getting back to, and gamification for some people, when you think about sales technology or sales enablement, there's all kinds of gamifications and scenarios, simulators that you can go on and use as a learning tool, a learning aid. But what we wanted to focus on here when we talk about gamification is turning this whole idea about effort and mindset or attitude and skill or technique, right? And when Tom Ziegler, and you see the book behind me, Choose to Win, I have it up there, not just for this webinar. I've read this book 5 times. I'll read it a 6th time. I'll read it a 7th time. I think it's one of the best business books, personal development books you could ever find, Choose to Win. Tom Ziegler, the proud son of Zig Ziegler, wrote this. He's written books before with his dad. This was his first book. And a couple things I'll bring to your attention in this book. Tom was speaking one time, and this is before the book was written, and having spent decades following his dad or being around his dad and being around all these other speakers, somebody asked him, hey, Tom, what's the fastest way to success? And Tom said, the fastest way to success is replacing one bad habit with one good habit, and repeat that over. Replace bad habits with good habits. Do it one at a time. That'll be your fastest way to success. The other thing that he talks about in the book is this that you're seeing on the screen, his performance calculator. And what I wanted to do here is that, again, we're talking about amplification, simplification, qualification, you know, gratification, but gamification here. If you thought about where you were right now, if I asked you on this webinar, where is your head today? Where's the head of your salespeople? And let's say you can only give yourself the highest score of 3 in any one of these categories on a scale of 1 to 3, where would you show up? So let's just say, for argument's sake, it's a 1. In attitude, and maybe our effort, you know, it's not the best, but it's a 2. But man, we really know our business. We know how to sell. We've got that down. Our skill is always going to be a 3. Well, 1 times 2 is 2, and 2 times 3 is 6. If we take it the other way to the farthest extreme, and we say, man, we woke up today. I can't wait to get after it. I'm a 3 here. I'm putting in all the calls. I'm doing everything. My skill is still a 3. That's a 27. Look at the difference between the 6 and 27. If you wanted to gamify your day, if you wanted to gamify your approach to getting after it and showing up ready to win and ready to play, just do the simple analysis. Where's my head today? Where's my heart? Is it a 1? My attitude? Is my effort? Am I doing the behaviors? Am I doing the right things? As Michael said earlier, do the right things and just do it. Your gut knows before your head does. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go do it. Am I putting in that effort? And do I have the skill? Now, maybe you don't have the skill. Maybe you're just starting out in the industry, and this is an area that we can work on or work towards to help you get better. So playing to win, you know, means showing up, understanding our opponents, the competition, and knowing that every little sale we make isn't the real deal. Every little sale that we make, every new raving fan that we work with, every new friend we start to build and put into our network, we're playing for a bigger reason. We're helping them.
Yeah, and I just want to touch on that. Listen, these things are easy. Excuse me, these things are simple, but they're not easy. We all have tough days. We're in a business and life. There's setbacks, there's challenges. It's difficult. So I'm going to suggest to you, there's 2 things that you want to look at in your life. Your inside world, what's happening in here, and the outside world is influencing you. Who and what, who, you know, they say you're the sum total of your five closest friends. That's part of the deal. You're also who you surround, what you surround yourself with. So when you go into my house, you'll see weights, you'll see a Peloton, you'll see healthy food in the refrigerator, you'll see my Lord and Savior on the wall because I'm a believer. So you'll see in my sight, out of mind, in sight, in mind. So in this challenging world that's constantly throwing things at you of what you should believe and situations in your life that are negative, surround yourself with people and things that will support and anchor you to who you are and who you want to become, what you're doing now, and what you want to do moving forward.
That's awesome, Michael. You know, and for those of you, I didn't mention this in the front part. It might have been on his bio. I forgot if I looked. But Michael doesn't just say things like to say, oh, you know, you'll see healthy food or you'll see this exercise. Michael lives this stuff every single day. I know because I've known him for more than 20 years. He lives this stuff every single day.
Now, listen, I got my smoothie right here with protein and with antioxidants. You know, I just turned 65 on Monday. So, and I was telling Mike, and this is all part of what we coach on, what Mike coaches on, which is phenomenal, and what you'll learn in the Efficacious of Selling and Amplification, and the great organization, Mike, you work with, is, you know, the whole thing is doing a little bit more every day, getting a little bit better every day, and that's amplifying all the things that are most important to you. And that's simple but not easy, but you surround yourself with people and things that push you forward, don't hold you back.
That's right, and we have to get after it. So what you're looking at here, folks, is you see the book, The Efficacious of Selling. I think many of you have already downloaded. If you haven't, if you're watching this recording for the first time after this webinar, please download it. It's a free book. We'd love to have you take a look at it. And what I talk about then there also are two things, a cookbook and a playbook. A cookbook, and again, you know, I've gotten this from different people throughout the years. I give a lot of credit to different organizations. You know, Sandler changed the way that I went around my own sales behaviors. When I got to work with them for 10 years and really get into the content, developing a cookbook, that's your behaviors, and that's amplifying. Again, understanding what does my day look like? What does the day of a champion look like? It's not just talking about it. See, some of you will look at this or hear this webinar and you'll say, oh, that's pretty good for Joe, or that's good for Mary, or that's good for Barbara, or that's good for John. This is good for you. This is good for all of us. This, to understand what we do every single day, what makes up our little successes, and repeat those disciplines, the small disciplines, the big disciplines, and do them every single day. But until we know what those are, we're just winging it, you know, and we have to put some structure around that. The playbook is, how am I going to run the plays? What are the questions I want to ask? That came up earlier, and that was awesome that we got to jump into that, Michael. You know, what are the questions that I need to ask? What are the responses I should get? And then what are my follow-up questions to ask? What are the questions that they're going to ask me, and what are my responses? What are the objections I'm going to hear? And until you capture that, put it all in a playbook and have all of your information about your rates and product information and industry information into a great place. You know, it makes all the difference when you can have your cookbook and playbook in order.
And your competitive advantage, you know, why you versus someone else.
Right. And why do we do all those things? It doesn't matter. Michael, you know this because I've pretty much coached or trained or sold training in just about every industry there is. So I've studied this. And although, you know, we come up with sometimes 25 to 30 different key performance indicators, KPIs,
yeah,
that almost every industry finds important, we started to net those down. And we started going industry by industry. And these top 10 were the majority of the ones that showed up in the top 10. The order might have been different for some industries or some specific companies, the way that they viewed it. But these top 10 came up all the time. And and this is the most common order. And look at the first one. If they can improve, and then what we see in the very beginning, 75% of companies attribute their success to amplified sales behaviors. We all, everything that we do, think about this, folks, every one of you on the call. If we're going to get better in anything, personal life, professional life, whatever it is, there's four things we're trying to do. We're either trying to increase something, improve something, expand something, or reduce something. And that's where these all fall into. We're trying to increase our sales behaviors because we want to increase revenue. We want to improve margins. But I'd love to ask the audience right here, and now we're going to open it up to questions because we're done, but I would love to see, what are the top two or three that you're trying to improve, increase? What is most important to you in your business right now? Is it reducing the turnover that, you know, that your people are leaving or people are being poached? Is it improving the bundles and your service offerings? Is it getting better margins? What's most important to you that would drive that level of success. And as we're waiting for people to put those in, any other questions? Michael, any final thought as people are maybe
You and I are, and we've, you know, I have a podcast show, Michael, and I've had the blessing of having you on the show and many other top leaders and experts. And, you know, they're all avid learners and they're all interested in growing and getting better. You watch NFL sports and what you see after every game, they interview the top, the all-star player of that game. And they all say, yeah, they give credit to the others, but we have to get better. What do you want to improve upon? I encourage everyone to read, to learn, to grow, to develop. And this Ifications of Sales in the Cookbook is certainly a phenomenal start. And so is Zenix. I know. Yeah,
Michael, thank you for giving up the hour today and for the practice and for being my friend and my coach and my, you know, one of my my rope men who, you know, always comes through for me, man. I love you. And thank you all for being on here. And I'll leave you with this quote one more time. If you change it, if you take nothing else away from this, just remember this: talent without effort breeds mediocrity. You can set yourself apart by amplifying our attitude, our behaviors, and amplifying our skills. Do what we need to do to learn more, to be as successful as we could possibly be. So with that, we're right at the top of the hour, Michael. This was phenomenal. And thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to check back for new episodes of Inside the Mortgage Mind, a podcast by Zenix, the Mortgage Academy. You can download our episodes wherever you love to listen to podcasts or on our website at zenix.com/insidethemortgagemind.